The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
U.S. Customs and Border Protection is putting a pause on cargo processing at the Bridge of the Americas in El Paso, Texas. It's to free up border officers to help with the processing of the increasing number of migrants who show up at the border. Data from the city of El Paso shows CBP migrant encounters are the highest they've been since May. Texas Sheriff Thaddeus Cleveland is a former Border Patrol officer and says this is not a good sign.
At the ports of entry, you have Office of Field Operations officers, and they're there to make sure legitimate trade and travel passes to and from the United States. So we're taking those people from those ports of entry to help Border Patrol because there's simply not enough Border Patrol agents.
Truckers who use the Bridge of the Americas will instead need to go through other crossing points in New Mexico and Texas. Back in April, officials suspended all commercial operations for 3 days at the Bridge of the Americas for the same reason. The head of a truckers association in Juarez, Mexico, then told Border Report the detours and long lines could cost the industry $10 million a day.
This administration, going back 2 years, was flying migrants to Westchester County Airport, long before southern states were ever moving migrants to New York. This administration was. The southern border has been overrun, and these communities cannot handle it. And so Mayor Adams and Governor Hochul, in their infinite wisdom, and the Democratic politicians in New York and New York City believe that we should be a sanctuary city and sanctuary state. They believe we should not cooperate with ICE or law enforcement officials. And they have used taxpayer funds to provide free housing, free health care, free education, free food, free clothing, with no accountability. And so what happens? We now have had over 100,000 migrants come to New York City in just the last year. They can't handle it. And let's be clear, this is not about being against immigration. I've said many times before, my wife is an immigrant. I've been through this process. It is a fundamentally broken one. But we have to have a process that works.
New York's been pretty compassionate with the migrants so far. We've been paying for $500 a night hotel rooms. We gave them Xboxes, flat screens, cribbage. They don't even play cribbage. We've been doing their laundry for them. We even cooked culturally appropriate food for them after they threw away our PB&Js. And now they're getting free education and free health care. And they're paying no taxes, but for us, we pay the IRS half.
Emily.
Oh, here you go. You got people coming in now. Take a look at this. A lot of young adult men being let through now. The only one.
Ghana.
You're from Ghana.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm from Haiti.
You're from Haiti.
Yeah.
You're from Haiti.
No me van pasando por la. No me vende una cuarta parte de lo que viene. ¿Eh? No sé. Nosotros vivimos pegado al riel, pero allá, por allá por el puente peatonal de la Plaza de las Culturas. No me, pero se bajó exageradamente un chingo de raza.
If this were happening in any other nation around the world, I mean, they'd bring in the army, they'd bring in the National Guard, they'd bring in all that they had to repel the invasion, to push back. But not in the United States. This is all part of the plan. It's all part of the fundamental transformation. Just open the gates wide and let everyone in. And everyone is coming in. They're coming in from all over the world. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We certainly appreciate you joining us on this Tuesday morning. We come to you live every weekday morning at 11 a.m. in the central time zone of the United States at TrumpetDaily.com. Also, we're live at our Rumble channel. Just search for The Trumpet Daily. You can watch live every weekday morning at 11. And you can also watch the replay on LFA TV. That's over at Rumble as well. So any sane leader, as I say, he'd bring in all the reinforcements that the country had to stop this. But not so with the fake president. He's instead, he's at the UN, and he's a champion for the LGBT, and on it goes through the alphabet. This is clip four.
Do not have the potential stifled by systemic discrimination that the LGBTQI plus people are not prosecuted or targeted with violence because of who they are. These rights are part of our shared humanity. They're absent. When they're absent anywhere, their loss is felt everywhere.
I was going through a few verses in Isaiah this morning in Principles of Living, just about how the world is upside down. How that we need God and His perspective in order to see the right side up. There's the fake president. He's in New York. He's talking about violence aimed at the LGBTQ community. It's upside down. Meanwhile, tens of thousands of illegal immigrants, they're just streaming across the border, and many of them are criminals. Some of them are terrorists even. This is from the Miami Herald. A growing number of people on the U.S. terrorist watch list were encountered at U.S. borders in 2023, Homeland Security officials said on Thursday, noting in an annual report that a record number of migrant arrivals had complicated border and immigration security this past year. Imagine that. I mean, in some cases, they're just opening the doors literally and letting them in. They're not even processing them. Why bother? You lose track of them once they're in anyway. So we might as well expedite the process. Here's the Homeland Security admitting that, yeah, we have apprehended more individuals on the terrorist watch list. How easy would it be for a terrorist sponsoring nation to just send some terrorists, a terrorist cell, to some country in Central or South America, and then claim that, well, we need asylum. It's dangerous in our home country. And they're not even coming from that country. Like you heard in the opening there, they're coming from all over the world. It says approximately 160 non-U.S. citizens on the watch list attempted to cross into the United States in 2023, most of whom were encountered attempting to illegally enter between ports of entry. That's according to the DHS. It says that's an increase from 2022 when border officials encountered roughly 100 individuals on the watch list attempting to enter the country. 100 last year, now 160. And these are just the ones they're apprehending. What about the ones who sneak through? What about the ones who aren't caught? 100 last year and now 100 on the terrorist watch list. It's an invasion. It's an invasion. This was Donald Trump talking about the constructing the border wall a few days ago, clip two.
Upon my inauguration, I will terminate every open border policy of the Biden administration and commence the largest deportation operation in American history. We have no choice. This is not sustainable. You don't have to know very much to know. I looked at Tucson, Arizona today. Did you see that? Thousands and thousands of people all over. People walk out of their house, they say, what's happened to our beautiful place? But this is in many towns and cities all over. Look at New York City. But you know, you see New York, but you don't see other places so much. And it's happening like that, much worse, actually, much worse. This is not sustainable. No country can sustain it or financially can sustain it. Nobody could possibly sustain something like this.
Unsustainable, he says. And of course, from Obama's perspective, this is all by design. This is planned by Joe Obama. This is what they want. This, as I said at the top, this is how you bring on among other policies. This is how you bring on fundamental transformation. This is how you change the United States permanently for the worse. And as I say, any sane leader would say exactly what Donald Trump said right there. And yet look at what this man goes up against for something that's just common sense. And not just against Joe Obama. I mean, he's going up against both sides, as I covered yesterday. He's going up against the Uniparty just to try to bring some level of security. He's not even in power at the moment, so he can't really do anything. But when he was in power, he had to fight every step of the way for every foot of that wall, that barrier at the southern border. Listen to clip three.
We built nearly 500 miles of border wall. You know, they like to say we built 57 miles. No, we built over 500. In fact, if you look at the various government statistics, we did a great job. And I had to fight Paul Ryan. I call him Paul Rhino. But I had to fight Paul Rhino, and I had to fight Mitch McConnell, another beauty. And I ended up taking the money out of the military. I said, it's an invasion. I'm sorry.
He had to fight the Republicans, you know, the good establishment Republicans, Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell. This is from Fox News. It says the Department of Homeland Security's internal watchdog has found that officials at the besieged southern border often failed to accurately obtain the addresses of tens of thousands of the migrants it released into the United States, finding that at least 177,000 migrants have been released after giving either an invalid or illegitimate address or not giving one at all. As I say, I mean, what's the point of even processing them if they disappear once they're in anyway? America Under Attack. Let me just give you a few excerpts from this book. If you don't have it, make sure you call our operators and request your free copy. The 800 number, it's 1-866-930-3024. In that book, it says, today, many people recognize the immense threat posed by illegal immigration and the fact that radical leftists are actively using it to weaken the country. This demographic transformation of the country's population has been underway for more than a generation. It goes back and gives some of the history, going back all the way to 1986. It says in 86, drug cartels opened up new drug pipelines between Colombia's cocaine fields and America's inner cities. Cocaine-related hospital emergencies rose 110%. Of course, today it's fentanyl that's getting some of the headlines. Not nearly enough. Drug use in America has expanded massively, and many states have even legalized certain drugs. Before 1986, such a drug state of our country would have been unbelievable. You've seen the pictures. You've seen the images. We saw some of them in this morning's forum that Joel Hilliker gave. Just looking at the streets of Philadelphia, people stoned out of their minds, just passed out on the streets, on the sidewalks. It's the same way in Baltimore, in San Francisco, in Los Angeles. What are we turning into? It says, our lurch toward lawlessness and evil can be traced back to a turning point in the mid-1980s. That's because Satan and his demons were cast down at that time and thereafter intensified their attack on America. Now, you can read about this in Revelation 12. This is covered at length in America Under Attack as well. What happened there in the mid-1980s? Satan being cast down, Satan and his demons confined to this earth. And they've got their fingerprints on just about everything that you're seeing in today's world. We can thank God that it's not going to continue for much longer. We're living right here at the very end of days, the last days. In the last days, 2 Timothy 3, perilous or dangerous times shall come. We've arrived. And the leadership is just as Isaiah 3 prophesied. The children are in charge. The communists are running the show. They're just driving the nation into the ground. That's what they want. This is how they hold on to power. It says elites are now actively destroying the Constitution and undermining law enforcement. They're denigrating anything godly and good about American history. You'd probably fall off your chair if you heard Joe Biden at the UN talk about the traditional family and how important it is for a family to have a husband and a wife, how important the father's role is, how important the mother's role, and how important that it is that the children are taught and trained, brought up, nurtured in the way that they should go. They're not going to take a message like that to the UN. They're more concerned about making sure there's never, ever, ever a violent act against someone from the LGBTQ community. And look around. Who's persecuting those people? Who's acting violently? We've seen an act of violence carried out by a member of that community in Nashville not that many months ago. And the regime media, of course, quick to just kind of cover up those details. It says here, they're applauding and elevating the wicked and unjust. They're intentionally exacerbating social divisions. They're destroying the family, even attacking the very existence of male and female. These are Satan-inspired attacks that highlight the heightened influence of this evil spiritual force. Look at the leaders. Look at how deranged and demented they are. Look at what they fight for. And then look at what they let loose onto the streets of America. There was that story coming out of California where the California AG is suing the big oil companies because of how much damage they've done to the climate. That's right. You heard me right. You read it and you think it, surely this is from the Babylon Bee or the Onion, but no. Listen to these leaders, these elites. All it takes is getting one radical Obama-appointed judge. And it may be that these big oil companies will have to pay. Listen to clip 9.
We're looking for an abatement fund, which is payment by the big oil companies to pay for the damage that they created. It's simple. They're responsible for their actions. They should pay for the damage they created. They have... stuck the bill with Californians to pay for lost homes, increased insurance, lost farms, health and risks and greater cost to their health insurance. California shouldn't pay that. They should pay it because they created it. So
they've been lying to people. They've been playing you and everybody watching us like fools. They've had information that none of us were privy to. They knowingly misled people. They deceived people. As a consequence, we didn't take the kind of actions we would have taken to hold these big polluters accountable. The climate is in deep distress.
Yeah, the temperature goes up by what? 0.00003%. And here comes Gavin Newsom and his attorney general. And they've got to go after an oil company that maybe they have an oil rig in California. I saw where Joe Biden just banned drilling in New Mexico. I don't know if you've driven through New Mexico recently. There's quite a lot of open space, quite a lot of tumbleweeds. Just one oil rig or two oil rigs is going to destroy the state and the country? These people are radicals through and through, and their policies are destroying. We just passed $33 trillion. That's the national debt for the United States of America. I mean, you can't even wrap your mind around that figure. $33 trillion, and these people want to continue spending like drunken sailors. Do you think they're spending trillions and trillions of dollars that we don't have because they love the oncoming generation? Do you think all of these drug-addicted psychopaths, in some cases, in Philadelphia or wherever, that are just lying on the streets. Do you think authorities are allowing for that to happen because they love their city, they love your children, they want a safe environment for young people? It's exactly what America Under Attack has said. They denigrate anything godly. They applaud and elevate the wicked and the unjust. This junk food aholic, he's declared himself as such. That's not my label. He's big on the COVID booster. He's out. He's written a book now saying that you better get your shot. And here's this deranged lunatic talking about how the problem with people not getting vaccinated. Well, that's brought on by, you know, let's see, red states, CPAC. What other conservative movement can we blame? Listen to this number one.
We're looking at 200,000 Americans who needlessly perished because they refused the COVID vaccine. The point I make in the book is we're calling it misinformation or infodemic. It's none of those things, Chris. It was organized, it was deliberate, it was politically charged, and it was politically motivated. It happened starting in the CPAC conference in Dallas in 2021. The conference of conservatives, they said first they're going to vaccinate you, then they're going to take away your guns and your Bibles. And as ridiculous as that sounds to us, people accepted that they featured prominent anti-vaccine activists. And then what they did was the pile on from members of the House Freedom Caucus who openly promoted anti-vaccine rhetoric. You know, Marjorie Taylor Greene talked about us as medical brown shirts using Nazi paramilitary analogies. Jim Jordan, Senator Ron Johnson holding so-called vaccine injury roundtables, Rand Paul, the governor of Florida. And then amplified every night on Fox News during the Delta wave. And this is documented by two groups, by Media Matters.
Oh, it's documented by Media Matters. Well, that must mean this is legit. Media Matters, this is where the left gets their talking points. This man is a left-wing activist who promotes junk food and shots and getting boosters for the COVID. And evidently, people dying of COVID, it's only happening in red states. This is perhaps certainly not up to Fauci's level, but he's on the talk shows, he's on the news cycle over and over again out there spewing that propaganda. That's all that it is. It's just propaganda. Nothing about the vaccine side effects, nothing. Just throws numbers out there, hundreds of thousands dying from COVID because they didn't get the vax. This is from, forget the source, but these two, Obama's DOJ, I mean, they're out in full force persecuting the opposition. I noticed before we came on live today that they finally indicted Ray Epps. Probably just like with the Hunter thing. Well, we've got to do it. Look, it's making us look bad. For 2.5 years, we've gone after this guy who walked in there for 10 minutes and then left. He's in prison. But Ray Epps, who was telling everybody to go inside, somehow he skated free until today. It'll be interesting to take a look at that and see what the charges actually are. But this is from, this is regarding these two women that protested outside of an abortion clinic. A federal jury today convicted three defendants of both offenses in a two-count indictment, charging them with federal civil rights offenses in connection with the October 22, 2020 invasion of a reproductive health care clinic in D.C. The defendants, one of them's 41 and the other two ladies are 73 and 74. They were each convicted of a felony conspiracy against the rights and a FACE Act offense. Here they're at this facility, they're praying, they're praying for people not to abort their babies, and Obama's DOJ throws them in the slammer. I mean, this is the same DOJ that opens the slammer doors for BLM and Antifa so that they can get right back on the streets. Really sickening stuff. From the Post-Millennial, it says, an independent journalist has been found guilty by a D.C. jury on charge. It's all D.C. I mean, if you're in D.C., if you're tried in D.C., you better get ready to go into the gulag. Charges related to January 6, 2021. Stephen Horn was found guilty of entering or remaining in a restricted area, disorderly or disruptive conduct in a restricted area, disorderly conduct in a Capitol building, and parading. He was parading, demonstrating or picketing in the Capitol building. This guy said he hates Trump, but he was there with his video camera, claiming to be a journalist, but hey, you're parading. You're part of the problem. Now we've got to put you in jail. You remember Jake Sullivan, the Antifa guy that you look into his background, you see the Antifa roots. He's right there in the thick of it. He's right near where Ashley Babbitt was gunned down. He's actually vandalizing the place. And what happened right after January 6th? Well, he sold his footage to CNN for tens of thousands of dollars. And then he's able to hide behind the fact that, well, I was just reporting. I'm a journalist, you see. I'm a journalist. Well, too bad for whatever this guy's name is, Stephen Horn. He said, look, I was just filming it in the interest of journalism as well. Obama's DOJ just put him in jail. This is from Julie Kelly. She's one of the few that will not let this story go, this false narrative, and the persecution, the blatant persecution aimed at MAGA supporters. Says, as the body count, as the body count, excessive prison sentences and new arrests related to January 6 pile up, the twisted bloodlust of the left is on full display. She writes about this young kid from Utah. Yord Meacham was the sort of person the elites in Washington despise. One of 10 children in what appears to be a tight-knit family, Yord lived in rural Utah near the Nevada border, working on his family's ranch. He enjoyed fishing, hunting, and riding horses. He was a big history buff. Listening to music was a big part of his life, and young kids were drawn to him. That's from his obituary. Killed himself. He was indicted. He was about to have his arraignment. He went inside the Capitol for 10 minutes. 22-year-old kid. Julie Kelly says that he's now at least the fourth that we know of these January 6th defendants that have committed suicide. Says on January 6th, Yord made a decision that deeply offended the ruling class in the nation's capital. He demonstrated his support for Donald Trump. According to the FBI, Yord and his uncle Odin traveled to D.C. on the 5th. They attended the rally at the Washington Monument, the affidavit read. They then walked with the crowd to the U.S. Capitol. As they approached the Capitol, Odin became separated from Yord. Later that afternoon, they reunited and they left the area. While carrying a Trump flag, a detail the FBI agent intentionally noted in his report, he was carrying a Trump flag. That's a bad sign. Yord, who was 19 at the time, entered the Capitol and spent less than 10 minutes inside the building. He did not assault a police officer or damage government property. And although the complaint stated Yord was escorted out by police that afternoon, he was not arrested at the time. Instead, Yord's arrest came more than 30 months later. 30 months later, he's arrested. After Yord gave a voluntary interview with the FBI the day after his uncle was arrested for his participation in the Capitol protest, the feds opened an investigation into the young man. Yord was arrested on August 2nd and charged with four common misdemeanors. On August 28th, U.S. District Court Judge Reggie Walton, one of the most unhinged judges overseeing January 6 cases, scheduled Yord's assignment, or rather arraignment. Later that evening, Yord killed himself. He scheduled the arraignment on August 28th, and then Yord committed suicide that night. Locked himself into a shed on the ranch and shot himself in the head. It says the office of Matthew Graves, the U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia, announced in a brief filing on September 1st that Yord had passed away and the case against him would be closed. A spokesman for Graves' office refused further comment. Well, we're not going to comment on this case. The case is closed. Yord is the fourth known suicide of a January 6th defendant. Christopher Stanton, Georgia, 53, shot himself in the chest a few days after January 6th. He had been arrested and charged with unlawful entry and violating the city's curfew. Mark August, 47, killed himself in July of 2022, a month after pleading guilty to a petty offense of parading in the Capitol. Pennsylvania resident Matthew Perna, 37, took his life last year after learning the DOJ would seek years in prison for his felony obstruction plea. His aunt, Jerry Perna, has since become an outspoken advocate for January 6th defendants. There's not that many of them. Congratulations to Julie Kelly for at least staying on this story. But look at the people suffering under this tyranny, under this rogue system of justice in Washington, D.C. Look at the abuse of power. It's happening every day. Every day, whether you look at the southern border, whether you look at the biggest DOJ investigation in history, every day we see it. Every day we see Satan and his fingerprints all over what's happening to the United States of America. America's under attack, just like this book says. If you don't have a copy of it, again, make sure you call our operators and request your free copy. Also, you can subscribe to the Trumpet magazine. All the literature that we offer on this program is offered without cost or obligation. Just call our operators today, 1-866-930-3024. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to email the show, you can reach us at td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
The developed nations have made awesome progress. They have produced a highly mechanized world, providing every luxury, modern convenience, and means of pleasure. Yet they are cursed with crime, violence, injustice, sickness and disease, broken homes and families. At the same time, more than one half the world is living in illiteracy, abject poverty, filth and squalor. Violence and destruction are rapidly multiplying. Many ask, why, if God exists, does he allow so much violence and human suffering? To understand the reason behind this astonishing paradox, request a complimentary copy of Mystery of the Ages. We were born into this 20th century world as it is. We take it for granted, but we can't explain it. It's like viewing a movie at a point already near the end. We see what is occurring at that point, but not having seen it from the beginning and not knowing how events developed to the point of viewing, we simply cannot understand what we are seeing. Mystery of the Ages transports you back to the beginning of the movie, to the foundation of this present evil world. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com.
Joining us now is the Arizona Secretary of State, Katie Hobbs. She is the state's chief elections officer. She's also running for the Democratic gubernatorial nomination tonight in Arizona. She is favored, but it is early, and until the votes are counted, we don't have a winner. But let me, Madam Secretary of State, let me start with your gubernatorial race.
One of your potential opponents, Carrie Lake, she believes of some type of fraud or impropriety. Your reaction to that, and if you do wind up facing her in the fall, what would your strategy be, given that she does seem to be focused on 2020 still?
Look, the outright lies that she's telling about things that she has no evidence for are absolutely disqualifying.
Okay. Terry. Katie Hobbs, I know you actually have to do, you're not just on the ballot, you gotta oversee this stuff as well.
Now to the race for governor of Arizona.
A new poll shows the race for Arizona's governor is widening, and Carrie Lake is pulling ahead.
Republican Carrie Lake here is now leading in the governor's race.
Overwhelmingly for Lake.
The top of the ticket is Carrie Lake for governor.
Current polls show Republican challenger Carrie Lake with a slight lead over Hobbs.
Our latest poll shows Democrat Katie Hobbs and Republican Carrie Lake tied at 49%.
Neck and neck.
The governor's race between Democrat Katie Hobbs and Republican Carrie Lake is a dead heat.
So Maricopa County invested in new tabulation machines in 2019. Officials say 20% of them are having issues.
One of the tabulators is not working.
Our only option at this point is to ask you to please put your ballot into door number 3.
If you can't put the ballot in the tabulator, then you can simply place it here in where you see the number 3, And this is a secure box.
Arizona election officials are assuring voters that every ballot will be counted following a printing malfunction in the state's most populous county.
We've been hearing about some of the technical issues affecting about 20% of those polling locations.
Issues are going to arise at the polls.
There are going to be problems. We use millions of machines.
What do we know factually? What's happened?
No one is being disenfranchised. That is the important thing. And none of this indicates any fraud or anything of that sort. This is a technical issue.
Some of the tabulators got jammed. They couldn't use them as they were intended. Literally a locked box is attached to each one of those, and they could put their voted ballots in there. Didn't add to longer lines.
Leading to longer lines than expected, they claim that some voters were turned away from those polling places.
None of the machines we're voting are right. Working, and they are telling us that we have to leave.
The Republican candidate for governor, Carrie Lake, was retweeting videos from voters at these polling locations experiencing these issues, saying in one of them, a quote, "This is why we must reform our elections."
Things always go wrong in some places. There's a process, like a fail-safe alternative process.
Let's be frank here. There is a process here. We all expected this to take a while.
Hundreds of thousands of votes here in Arizona remain to be counted. The races have narrowed. We expected that.
When are we going to be done with all the ballots? Let's see here. About 62,000 came out two nights ago, about 75,000 last night. And then if we've got about 340,000 left, then I'm looking at, what is that, guys? Five, six days here in Maricopa County. How about that for some quick math?
These are like not big issues, though. They're sort of little issues.
There were some problems, but importantly, in Maricopa County, Arizona, in other places, in Michigan and other places where there were some issues, everyone got to vote, and their vote was going to be counted. There might have been some lines, there might have been some delays, there might have been some confusion, but it all worked.
What surprised you most about yesterday?
How smoothly the voting process actually went. That election officials really did as I thought they did. They had it. They had this covered.
Lake lost to Katie Hobbs by more than 17,000 votes and was a vocal supporter of the election lies spread by former President Trump and followed in his footsteps, denying her election loss and filing a lawsuit claiming she was cheated with scant evidence.
I have a stern warning to anybody who thinks they're going to try to steal this next election. You're going to get caught. We're watching you. You are being watched, and there will be hell to pay. I'm not even, to be honest, I'm not looking to 2024. I don't know that we're going to make it to 2024. I think we have minutes left on the clock to save this country. And so I don't care about 2024. I care about 2022. And if we don't get it right now, America, in this midterm, we're not going to have a country in 24.
Flashback from, what was it, I guess most of 2022, all those primaries, and then of course the farce that was the gubernatorial election in November of just last year. Election day turning into election week there at Maricopa County, the most populous county in Arizona, but they just can't, it's just impossible. Notice all the talking heads, too. When everything starts to turn to confusion and the machines don't work and there's long line, and then they come out, they rush to the microphone and they say, this is just completely normal. Happens all the time. No, it doesn't. Doesn't happen all the time. This is a recent phenomena. It's happening in 2020. It's happening in 2022. And there you hear Carrie Lake saying, if we don't get this fixed, you know, we've lost our country. She was here last week, as many of you know, and we sat down with her, I guess a week ago today. And we sat down with her, we talked about election integrity. And she had this case going on at the Ninth Circuit, this federal courthouse in Phoenix, regarding her challenge to what happened there. In November of last year, it says here, this is from Just the News, former Arizona GOP gubernatorial candidate Carrie Lake's attorney, Andrew Parker, alleged Tuesday that the voting machines in the Grand Canyon State are vulnerable to multiple manipulations and vulnerabilities that are ignored by the courts. This is something Democrats always used to say before 2020. The machines are vulnerable. It quotes her attorney. We are only looking back for purposes of the historic fact background. People can get into the system through a number of different manipulations and vulnerabilities. that have been testified to by serious experts across the country, and it's being ignored by the courts. And the courts are shutting down review. Why? The courts should allow discovery. This is what they're aiming for here. Kick it back to the lower level and allow the discovery process. Let us look at the machines, in other words. Let us look at the software. It says, last year, Lake and former Arizona GOP Secretary of State candidate Mark Fincham filed a lawsuit to ban the use of ballot tabulation machines in future elections in Maricopa and Pima counties. The lawsuit was rejected by U.S. District Court Judge John Tucci in August, who said it had conjectural allegations of potential injuries. It's just conjecture. Well, then let them examine the machines. Let them examine the tabulators. It's just Kari Lake, though, and Mark Fincham standing up for this. Where are all of the Republicans in the state legislature? Well, you see a lot of the same problems there in Arizona as you do in Texas, just like we covered yesterday. You get into those state legislatures and there you find rhinos that will not fight for anything except for their position in the state legislature. This is from Just the News as well. It says the Arizona Senate is inching closer to a lawsuit with the federal government after a national monument was declared in northern Arizona last month to limit mining in the area. I mean, this is what makes Republicans fight. It says here, President Joe Biden visited the state in August to speak about this area, ancestral footprint of the Grand Canyon National Monument, which is nearly a million acres. However, some Republicans have considered the move to be unconstitutional. Using the guise of creating a Grand Canyon National Monument in a remote area that is not even connected to the Grand Canyon is completely disingenuous. This is according to a Republican senator there. This move has nothing to do with protecting the Grand Canyon. It has everything to do with fulfilling his tyrannic desires to block responsible mining and agricultural production in an effort to cater to the extremists who elected him into office. See, a lot of that's true, what he's saying. Biden, he's heading up a tyranny. He's the puppet, of course. But he's doing this, he's declaring this just because of his extreme policies. And then these same people then pretend that the election was perfect. They would do all of this to just ramrod their policies down our throats, but they certainly would never steal an election. That's how we're supposed to play along. Isn't it revealing that these establishment Republicans, this finally gets them a little worked up, the monuments case, but not the machines, no. Not the tabulators, not the fact that they printed off, 19-inch votes or cards for 20-inch tabulating machines. Kari Lake has a lot to say about it in her book, Unafraid. We went through that last week. We also talked there at the end. I mean, she's fighting for election integrity. She's got a lot of irons in the fire. She's supposed to announce here in the next few weeks whether or not she's going to run for Senate. And then, of course, there's all the voices, all the talking heads out there suggesting that she may be a good VP pick for Donald Trump. Listen to this exchange from our interview last week, clip 11.
It's very, very early to even be discussing that. But what I love, though, when the fake news starts asking about President Trump's VP, is that they're subtly acknowledging that he's going to be the nominee, that he's going to be... Yeah. The president. And yeah. So I know that whoever he picks, a year from now when he decides who is going to be his VP, he'll look at the playing field, he'll figure out what does he need, who can help him, and he'll pick somebody. But he's such a strong man, he's such a strong leader. If there was ever anybody who didn't even need a VP, it would be President Trump. I hope he picks somebody who is incredibly loyal, because I know being in politics, you have someone stab you in the back. Right. You don't want people who aren't with you in your policy and your agenda on your inner circle. You want people who are fully America first. We've seen too much of the backstabbing already.
Yeah.
I hope he picks somebody that the media fears. I hope he picks somebody that will continue the MAGA movement. I don't want the, and I talk about moving forward in this book. I can't remember what chapter. It might be chapter 11. I don't want to see the America First movement end after President Trump's term. I can't wait for his next term. He's going to accomplish so much. We're going to get back on track. His Agenda 47 is the most transformative political agenda I've ever seen. And I know, because we know how effective he was the first go around, he's going to be even more effective this time. But we can't let it end with President Trump. We have to have this Make America Great Again, Save America, America First agenda continue on for our children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. This has to be the way of American politics from here on out.
Carrie Lake, thank you so much for joining us today on the Trumpet Daily.
It was such a pleasure. Thank you for having me, and the warm welcome I received today. It warmed my heart. I'll never forget that.
That's from last Tuesday. If you'd like to scroll through the feed on our Rumble channel, you can get to Carrie Lake's interview from just 7 days ago. If you go back 3 weeks before that, you can get to those two programs where we feature General Michael Flynn. They are fighters. They have demonstrated some courage. And this is something that we've emphasized on this program. Even if you go back to yesterday's show, I just talked about how that attorney from Houston representing Kim Paxton, just how bold he was to call out the Bush Republicans, to say boldly in the midst of that impeachment trial, that the Bush era in Texas is over. It's over. It really does illustrate what the Jeroboam administration is going up against. God says he's coming back. This is discussed at length in America Under Attack. Make sure you get your free copy if you don't have one by now. This same spirit of surrender, the same lack of courage. I mean, this is something that you saw in God's church so many years ago. As soon as Mr. Armstrong dies, that was in 1986, we talked about the significant change with respect to the devil and his demon army. But look at what his death also exposed in so many of those leaders in the worldwide Church of God as they compromised, they lowered their standards, they liberalize the doctrines, the teachings of the church. I mean, this is just like Joel Hilliker covered on the forum this morning. I mean, this is just the way of human nature to constantly lower the standard, just go along with the flow. The Laodiceans that did that found themselves in a dreadful and terrible spiritual condition. That Laodicean mindset, it's described there in Revelation 3 as being lukewarm, rich and increased with goods. They think they're secure because of their material things, but spiritually they're impoverished. Spiritually they're poor. They're blind. They're naked. That's what Revelation 3 says. Let me just take you through a few verses at the start of Revelation 3. This is the Sardis era. It says, "And unto the angel of the church in Sardis write, These things saith he that has the seven spirits of God and the seven stars. I know your works, that you have a name and that you live and are dead." I mean, these were people, the fifth era of God's church. They had works, but they didn't sustain them. They didn't persevere. Spiritually, they died. Verse 2 says, "Be watchful and strengthen the things which remain that are ready to die. For I have not found your works perfect before God." It says, verse 3, "Remember therefore how you have received and heard, and hold fast and repent." God delivered some truth to the Sardis people, but they rejected it. And that era of the church died. Verse 3 again, it says, "If therefore you shall not watch, I will come on you as a thief, and you shall not know what hour I will come upon you." In my father's book, The True History of God's True Church, that's another powerful booklet that we offer freely. Request The True History of God's True Church if you don't have a copy. It says, "The inherent weakness of the Sardis era was the lack of true spiritual repentance and conversion in the majority of people claiming membership with the church. They weren't deeply converted. And so they became an easy target for the devil. They weren't close to God. Down in verse 15, it says, I know your works, that you are neither cold nor hot. I would that you were cold or hot. You see, God wants us to be, he doesn't want us to be in the middle. This is with respect to the Laodicean era, the seventh era, again, characterized by lukewarmness. God says, I wish you were cold or hot, not something in between where you're just weak. You're neutral. You're a coward. You won't act. Verse 16, so then, because you are lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will spew you out of my mouth. This is what God thinks about spiritual lukewarmness, about those who lack courage to fight for the truth. It says in 2 Thessalonians 2 that he sent strong delusion because they didn't love the truth. They had the truth, but they didn't love it. And so God sent strong delusion to that church to test their love, to see if they really loved it, to see if they really were living it, or if they were just all talk. Mr. Armstrong wrote back in 1962, he said, but some of those in the church today will grow weary with well-doing. They will brag about being the true church, thinking they are spiritually rich, when they are, in fact, almost spiritually destitute. Because they are indifferent to the real work of God, lukewarm, lacking in zeal, Christ will spew them out of his mouth. They cannot be used in his work. They shall lose the very salvation they boast of having unless they repent. It says, God help you never drift into a Laodicean church or a Laodicean condition. We need God's help, or else that's just the natural course of man, of human nature. It's to just drift into a Laodicean mindset, a lukewarm spiritual condition. All we have to do to get there is just neglect those things that we should be attending to. Hebrews 2, 1 and 2. Notice Philippians 2 and verse 12. It says, wherefore, my beloved, as you have always obeyed, not as in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. See, we've all got to work it out. We've all got to do our part. We want to help each other in the spirit of God's love, help to bear one another's burdens, as it says in Galatians 6. But we, in the end, I mean, nobody's going to drag us into the kingdom of God. We've got to work it out. We've got to overcome. We've got to endure. Matthew 24, 13. We've got to endure to the end. My father wrote back in, it was earlier this year, he wrote a coworker letter, but he said, the Laodicean condition, let me just grab the quote here. He said, the Laodicean condition is selfish, unfaithful, and devoid of works. There's just a lot of talk, a lot of hot air. But it's selfish. There's no good works there. There's no work being done. And here we are, God's people, called to do a work, called to support God's work, to be on fire for God's work and God's truth. Not lukewarm, not blind and naked spiritually, but just filled with zeal to help God complete this work. We'll carry on with this study, if not tomorrow, maybe later this week, this Laodicean mindset. But that's all we have time for on today's show, unfortunately. You're listening to Stephen Fleury. This is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show, and we'll see you again tomorrow.